Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning out there in Blog Talk Radio land and Rainbow Soul and Google Play and iTunes. And I could just go on and on where people are coming in to Off the Shelf and our listeners. When I checked this week, they have gone up significantly. So I want to thank all of the loyal listeners who've been with us now for 13 years. Oh, my goodness, 13 years, you guys. And for those who just listening to Off the Shelf for the first time, I will definitely be introducing the show and you before we get you ready for our awesome guest who's on deck and excited to share information with you about writing and books and her books in particular. And we're going to share some tips. I definitely want to get some in on book marketing. So all our listeners, come in and get entertained and educated and inspired and get insights and things they can only get here at Off the Shelf Radio. And I want to tell you, there is still time for you to go tell your friends, your colleagues. I'm a book lover, and I've been a book lover since I was a kid, and I love hearing about great books, just like people got excited about the movie Black Panther and other movies. I remember when Titanic came out, but now it is Black Panther, and I love that movie. But we get excited when you really love a story to share it with other people. So there's still time for you to go out and tell your friends and book lovers and colleagues and relatives to dial in to Off the Shelf to learn about Sheryl Robinson's books. And the dial-in is 347-994-3490, or you can get Off the Shelf online. You just look up Denise Turney Off the Shelf. It should come up at the very top and click on the link to access the show online. But, again, the dial-in is 347-994-3490. You still got time to catch the show. And so now I want to drop a positive thought into your mind this morning. This one is from Nelson Mandela, and the quote is, "It always seems impossible until it's done." We know there's so much going on in the world, but whatever it is you want to do, remember that this man was put in prison and went on to become the president of a country who wanted to destroy him, which is pretty amazing. "It always seems impossible until it's done." Nelson Mandela. And again, you are listening to the Winning Book Radio Show, Off the Shelf. And welcome, welcome. We are getting ready to head into, this is the Saturday before the last Saturday of March. Can you guys believe that? Next Friday is Good Friday, and we headed into Easter. And March is almost over. So I hope you're thinking about the goals that you wanted to fulfill, including your reading goals. I said I was going to read more books this year, and I'm off to a good start. So we're happy to have you here on deck with us. Before we go and introduce you more to today's guest, I wanted to ask you, how good of a mystery sleuth are you? Are you one of those people who can figure things out before it's revealed in the book, before it's revealed in the movie? I actually saw a movie, Murder on the Orient Express, when it came out, and I was trying to figure out who did it before the very end of the movie. Do you love to do that? And do you also value relationships and love and romance and relationships, not only an intimate relationship, but a complicated parent-child relationship? Because our childhood relationships stay with us throughout our entire physical experience. I don't care how much therapy you get. I don't care what you do. There are parts of your childhood that are never going away. They stay with us forever. So if you value these types of relationships, and if, like Nelson Mandela, you believe it always seems impossible until it's done, if you value those things, I think you will really want to get a copy of Love Pour Over Me. It's in print and ebook form. If you don't see it, if you see it, go to like a Barnes & Noble, and you don't see it on the shelf, just ask the clerk. You want to get a copy of Love Pour Over Me by Denise Turney, and they can order a copy for you. Again, Love Pour Over Me by Denise Turney, and I hope you will go out and get your copy today. So now let us go, and we're going to go meet our very special off-the-shelf guest. And our special guest this morning is Sheryl Robinson. Sheryl is a Detroit, Michigan native. She earned her Bachelor of Science in Marketing from Wayne State University. And she wrote her first novel, Blues Bottom, in less than a week. And I'm impressed. And she wrote novels while she worked a corporate job. She writes contemporary women's fiction. And some of the books that Cheryl has authored include If It Ain't One Thing, Sweet Georgia Brown, In Love with a Younger Man, When I Get Free, Memories of Yesterday, and When I Get Where I'm Going, X-Ray. And she has her Ray series, which are her latest books that are out. And you can check out more of her Ray trilogy at untilraytrilogy.com, untilraytrilogy.com. Again, that's untilraytrilogy.com. But you can also find Cheryl Robinson at CherylRobinson.com. But her latest books, the Ray Trilogy, UntilRayTrilogy.com. We're going to talk about her Ray series and some of her other books this morning here on Off the Shelf. But first, we want to give her a great welcome. Welcome to Off the Shelf, Cheryl.
Thank you, Denise, for having me on your show. It's a pleasure to be here.
We're happy to have you here. Now, the first few questions we ask all of our guests, I used to just go right into the questions, and then some listeners said, can you give them time to give a little backstory on the authors before you go right into the questions? So the first few questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. So the first one of those questions is, can you tell our listeners, Cheryl, where you grew up and what life was like for you growing up?
Oh, sure. I grew up in Detroit, Michigan. I went to Catholic school up until eighth grade and couldn't wait to get out of that uniform. So for high school, I attended a public high school. It's Cass Tech, which is a four-year university preparatory high school that's in the heart of the city in Midtown. And I love my upbringing, my childhood. I mean, as with many teenagers, I had some challenges with, awkwardness and things like that, but I really enjoy my upbringing.
Okay. When you were a kid, Cheryl, what did you dream of becoming when you grew up? When you were, I want to grow up and be an astronaut, or I want to grow up and own my own business. What was your dream of becoming when you were a child?
Okay, that's an interesting question, because as a child, so my father really wanted a doctor. He really wanted one of us. I'm the youngest of three. He really wanted one of us to become a doctor. And initially, because at Cass, it was a university prep, so you could major. So that was something I was going to do or trying to do for my father, but nothing that – it wasn't a dream of mine. So initially, after high school, my goal had been to go to FIT in New York, and I wanted to become a fashion buyer. But I did, my parents did take me around to different schools, and FIT was one of our stops. But they weren't sold on the idea, and they were the ones paying for it. So initially, I went to Howard University for 2 years. But again, that just wasn't something that, I mean, I was set on becoming this fashion buyer and things of that sort. After 2 years I left, I ended up coming back home, went to Wayne State, as you mentioned in the intro, and with a marketing degree. So writing was something that while I was at Wayne State, I took a fiction writing class as an elective. And that's when I realized that's something that, I was really interested in, not necessarily thinking of it as a career, but when I, as you mentioned, writing the novel in a week, that was through a class. So we would write short stories, but my professor suggested that I enter this writing contest that they have annually. And so I toyed with the idea, but I waited until the last minute, so I only had a week, maybe 2 weeks to finish the novel, and I did it, and I earned a honorable mention, and I thought to myself, now I wrote this in under 2 weeks. I didn't even read it back. I didn't do any editing or anything. And so I wonder to myself, and the class I enjoyed tremendously, and that was like the easiest A I'd ever earned. So I wondered to myself, it was planted in my head, is this something I can do? You know, but it was years later before I decided to actually do that.
You are the second guest when I was listening to you, and thanks for what you shared. You're the second guest who I thought I was listening to a previous guest for a second who said, I did what my father wanted me to do. I pursued that. I said, that's deja vu. I heard that on this show before.
Oh, really?
It's amazing
yes.
how our lives, we think we are so, like, we think we're having an experience. Nobody's having except us. And then as we get out and branch out and listen to people, hopefully we connect with each other. That's just a blessing when we connect. We find out, whoa, this person actually had an experience similar to mine. So you were older when your writing sort of was something that you kind of stumbled into. But I have to ask you this. What prompted you, Cheryl, and how long was this book? What prompted you to write a novel in less than a week? And your very first novel at that, and how long did that book turn out to be?
So it wasn't something that was published. It was something that I did in college for a contest. And it was a little over 200 pages. And that's
wow.
what prompted me, you know, doing that contest. And I only had, you know, a little over a week to finish it. And so, you know, I just, since my professor suggested that I enter, I went ahead and entered. And I was shocked that I even received an honorable mention, you know. And that's what really made me think, okay, well, what if I actually, you know, gave this some time and, you know, edited the book and all of that, you know. But again, I was probably a junior. I'd say I was a junior in college at that time, and it wasn't until I started relocating with the company that I was working for at the time, Chrysler, that I was on my very first corporate relocation, and I was living in Syracuse, New York. And it was really dreary there, rainy a lot. I mean, and plus the environment that I came in, because they relocated a bunch of us because there was they had to get rid of a lot of people due to the scandal that happened at the office. So it was, you know, the environment wasn't that great. The people who were left, they were looking at us wondering what was going on, if they were going to be next. It was just a negative environment. So when I came home, just, you know, to relieve stress and all that, I started writing. And that's how I got into it, you know, when I started relocating, I started writing.
Man, you know what? It's amazing how, and this is something I tell myself, instead of thinking I know something, go with it. Go with it. Like the change at your job, you could see it as a bad thing, or you could go with it, and it leads you into some huge blessing.
That's so true.
You can fight it, or you can go with it. These shows, I got to tell you, Off the Shelf goes like a blur. It goes so fast. I never get around to asking all the questions, and I definitely want to talk about each of your books. But before we go into it, for writers who are in that place that you may still be in, or when you started writing, they were in, tell us, Cheryl, how do you manage to juggle the corporate work, which alone can be extremely challenging, and novel writing? How do you juggle that?
Oh, I can tell you how I used to juggle it, because I don't have the corporate life anymore. And, you know, I had that life for 11 years when I was juggling. I was juggling
wow.
both, yes, for 11 years. And then one day I came to work, and they, you know, called us all to the center of this branch office that I was working at. And they told us that it was going to be, first of all, when I came into work, our computers weren't working. You know, no one's computers were working, and the IT guy was not going around to try to assist us in that. So that was like one clue. And this was during the recession in 2009. So there was, you know, we were borrowing money. You know, Chrysler had to borrow money from the government and all this. So there was some talk that, you know, our jobs weren't that stable. So then I come to work, turn on the computer, nothing's coming on. We're looking over into the IT area. They're not getting up to assist us. So in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, this is not good. And then finally, I think they kept us waiting, though, for a minute, probably 30 minutes to an hour. And we're just talking and everything. And then finally, you know, the manager comes out and has us all come to, because Chrysler is a huge corporation, and I worked for the financial end of it, Chrysler Financial. It's a huge company, but I worked in a branch office. So it was probably maybe 75 to 100 of us. And they had us, it probably wasn't even 75, but anyway, they had us come to the center, and he stood up and he told us that this was going to be, you know, our last day. And so, you know, before when I left my home and was driving to work, I had no idea. So it was literally like, this is your last. No one had any idea. And it was some people who were so close to retiring, and they were, you know, breaking down and you know, in tears, like, you know, they couldn't believe it, you know. And but back to your question, how do you juggle it? I mean, it's difficult when you're working full time, and because writing is a full time job. I mean, you know, an idea could pop into your head. You know, you're a writer. An idea can pop into your head at any moment when you're driving or when you're at work or at lunch or anything. And it is, at a certain point, you have to give up something. Like, am I giving up television? Am I giving up? You know, what am I giving up to get this done? Because, you know, you're not going to necessarily give up your job unless you're at a point in your writing where you can do that. You know, at the point that I wasn't given a choice about my job, you know, my job was just taken away at that time. But, yes, it's definitely a sacrifice working and writing. But, you know, you find a way because writing is such a calling for you. Don't you agree? Like, isn't it really something
yeah,
that
you
when
like
you're driving
something you have
or
to
something?
Do. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Is
mm-hmm.
It, you feel like it's something you. So you do, and I've heard other people say that when something's really important to you, to us, we find a way to. We find a way to get it done, even if we have to ask somebody else, delegate different things. We have to set very clear guidelines with people. No, I can't work till 11 o'clock at night. I have a private life as well, so this is the way it is. You have to. That's the way, you know, a lot of us delegating, setting clear guidelines, and
yes,
setting a clear schedule when I'm going to write, because the corporate world will chew up every. Every moment.
Oh yeah.
You have.
Oh, definitely.
If you let it, they will chew up every moment that you have. Now, before we go in to talk about the fabulous Ray series, I want to talk about being in love with a younger man. That's something, you know, they had that show Cougar on years ago. Generally, it's flipped. Like with our president and first lady now, you'll see it generally be flipped where an older man might be with a woman who's 20 or 30 years younger than him. And nobody, there's no big deal, but when it's reversed, it can grab a lot of attention. Can you tell us what Oleanna Day, what is she like? She's this older woman who's in young love with this younger man, but what is she like?
Oh, you're taking me way back now, Denise. Oh, my gosh. You're taking me way back because you're taking me back to a book that I wrote when I was, you know, when I had a book deal with Penguin. And so that was one of the books that I wrote. It was before I became an independent. Well, I started off as an independent author. Then I was picked up and I did 6 books with Penguin under their New American Library imprint. And then now I'm an independent author. So you're taking me back to, like almost 10 years ago. But let me see if I can even remember about her. I know she was corporate. I know she was, you know, she had a really good corporate job. And because I still write because my other Sarita is corporate too. So because of my corporate background, a lot of times I will have, you know, put a little of that in there. But, you know, she had a great job. But, again, her relationship front, it wasn't materializing into anything. And she met this younger man. And I was kind of mirroring a little bit because at that particular point when I was writing that book, I was dating someone much younger than me, a man that was much younger than me.
Wow.
So, you know, I said, let me write this, a story about that. And when I was pitching it to my agent, he liked the idea, and then he was able to pitch it to the editor at Penguin, at New American Library, rather. You know, they picked up on it. Because sometimes, at least then, you know, I would pitch things that I was really passionate about that wouldn't get the go-ahead. It would usually get the go-ahead with my agent because he's, you know, my advocate. He was my advocate. But once he tried to pitch it to the editor at the house, you know, it would come back, well, no, we're not really interested in that, but what about this? You know, and so then I found myself sometimes writing things that I wouldn't necessarily – that wasn't my idea, but I tried to do the best I could with it. Whereas when you're an independent author, you know, then obviously whatever your idea is, you can go with. You still hopefully will get an editor, but your editor is still editing your work that you decided, you know, you want to write. So, you know, talking about In Love with a Younger Man, I will say it's a book that I did want to write. You know, some of the books that I wrote under, as I just mentioned, under New American Library, Penguin, weren't necessarily my idea. But that was one that was my idea based on an experience, you know, that I had.
Okay. Now, I wanted to ask you, I know you said you're going back 10 years, and I know Portia, for me, my first novel, I'd go back to 98 when that was published. But I still remember Portia. The characters, I think, are parts of the author. And I'm not sure if you feel that way, but I can the characters, they feel like a part of me, even to this day. And I know if it's not a book that you totally concepted, and I appreciate you sharing that, you might not feel as close to the character because it's somebody else's ideal. But I know in the book, Oleana, and I love that name, she's looking for change, and so she runs into Matthew Harper without giving a story away, because there could be off-the-shelf listener dealing with that now or thinking about it, and they might want to read your book. Without giving a story away, is that a good move for her? And is this the first time she's been in a relationship with a younger man?
Yes, it was her first time being in a relationship with a much younger man. Mm-hmm.
Now, for our listeners, he's 18 years younger, and I only have two more questions I wanted to ask you on this before we go into the race series, which I know is what you prefer to talk about, but I also want to talk about some of your other books. But so
okay.
He's 18 years younger than Oleana, Matthew Harper. What type of challenges does that present for both of them, Oleana and Matthew? This is a topic that impacts a whole lot of people in real life. What type of challenges does that age difference present for them in your book, In Love with a Younger Man?
I think for her, it presented the challenge of, is this a serious relationship for him? It is for me, but is it a serious relationship for him, or is it just something he's doing because this is a phase he's going through, you know, oh, you know, I'm with this older woman, you know. You know, so that was her challenge, so that may sound insecure, like she's insecure about it, but I think sometimes older women do wonder, especially when it's a considerable age difference, because then you talk about children, okay, if you're already, you know, she was, what, in her 40s, and he was in his late 20s, I believe
wow.
It was. So, you know, did he want children and all of that? But he really, truly loved her. But they had those challenges with her wondering things. And then there was another man involved that was more her age, more established, and someone she had to consider, is this a better match for me? You know, because he was young man trying to, you know, Matthew was a young man trying to get his life together. I mean, he had a pretty good, he had a great job too, don't get me wrong. He, for a young man, he was more established than some men his age because he was in the sales arena and he did well with the sales. He was a car salesman, but he was a good car salesman and he sold upscale cars. That's how they met, because she was buying a BMW convertible and he was a salesperson there. So
what would you, based on your experience and then writing the book, whatever you heard from maybe from readers who've also read your book, In Love with a Younger Man, would you recommend, is that something you would recommend, or just say stay open that it could work out, it could be a good thing?
It could be, or it just depends, or it could even be a phase for you too. Like when I look back at that, I was like, at the time I was so attracted to a younger man, but now I'm so attracted to men my age, you know, so I couldn't even imagine dating a man so much younger. I think that, you know, now I know exactly what you said in the beginning, you know, but is an older man attracted to me? Because a lot of times older men are attracted to women who are considerably younger than them. That's the norm. Like, that's not unusual when we see, you know, a man 50 with, you know, a woman half his age. You know, no one says anything. But for it to be flipped, you know, so I can't really say, because every situation is different. And there are some younger men who really do, you know, who are really more attracted to older women. So I don't think there's a blanket should they or should they not.
Just beware of the challenges, like you said, do you want children?
Mm-hmm.
But that applies regardless of your ages, because some people just don't want kids. Regardless of the age gap, do you
that's
want
true.
Kids? So a lot of those issues, that's a good point. A lot of those things would come up in any relationship. But these are things for anybody getting married, you would discuss. Do you want kids? How are you going to raise your kids? Where do you want to live? You want to live in a city or in a country? And this is stuff people don't even think about to after they get married.
Right.
then the issues come up. And
yeah, now they start
like,
talking. But
you should talk
or start
about
listening, one, because they
might
have been talking.
Oh,
right,
my goodness.
Right.
Now to your Ray Book series, as we go into continuing to talk about relationships and what can go right and wrong, did you always set out, Cheryl, to make the Ray Books a trilogy? Was that always your initial plan?
No, not at all. And this is the book that, and the series that, like you talk about your character staying with you for years and years to come, I know that these characters will stay with me for years and years to come, because the way it started and came about, it was so organic. First of all, it came from a time where I wasn't even sure I was going to write another book. And the book I intended to write was going to be more along the lines of, you know, not my life, but more of something that happened to my father when he was in ICU and all that. But I was too close to the story, and I didn't want to write about something that I was that close to, because I didn't think I would do it any justice. But then I felt a sense of obligation because my father passed away, and when he was in the hospital, I remember when he could speak, because it was a point when he no longer could, they had him intubated. But before that happened, you know, he was like, this would be a good book. You know, this is something you should write. So I felt like that sense of obligation initially to write it, because that was one of the last things he said, but it just wasn't working out. And it took a while for me to like let it go. And I remember looking down, because I was so obsessed with what happened to him and all the mistakes they made at the hospital, I got all of his medical records, and they were literally like about 20 boxes worth. That's how long he was in the hospital,
wow.
How much they did to him. And they, you know, I got all of his medical records, and so I would go through them, and I remember going through his x-rays. And I kept looking one day, this was like probably maybe 2 years after he passed or something, and I kept looking at x-ray, one of his x-rays, and I kept looking at the word x-ray, x-ray, x-ray. And I said, that would be interesting. That would be an interesting title, but just instead of saying X, do EX and Ray be the character, right? And so that's how the X-ray book, how I thought about it. And I carried it around with me for probably in my head for a good year after that. I just knew it was someone's ex and his name was Ray. And I was like, okay, this in my mind, I said, this is my father telling me, okay, I know you're having a hard time. Don't worry about writing the book about me. But I still felt it was born from something from him because I was staring at, you know, his x-ray.
Yeah.
That's how the title came about. And so then as far as it becoming a trilogy, for the first time, I said, well, I want to do things differently. Since I was at a place, and it could have been from depression, from what happened to my father and watching, you know, when you watch someone take their last breath,
oh,
I can't even
yeah.
describe. Because that was the first time I'd ever done, actually, yes, people, you know, close to me have passed, but I've never actually watched someone take their last breath and fight, you know, not for that to be the case. And so, and for to know it was preventable. And so, you know, I definitely feel I was going through depression. And you know, I just felt like, well, I don't want to write anymore. You know, a lot of my life has been dedicated to writing. And I just didn't think I wanted to do it. So it was, 5 years, and then this, I came out with my series, but I wanted to do some things different, and I had never worked with a beta reader. And so I said, well, that would be interesting, because one part of writing is, I don't know if you feel this way also, but, you know, it's somewhat of a lonely process. You want to keep everything close to the vest, you know, initially, but also you want feedback because you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, let me get some feedback. So, you know, I hired a beta reader. And she was actually the one. She said, also in the series, and I was like, series? She's like, so in this series, you know, where does this book fall? And I was like, maybe it is a series. And then not only that, I wanted to take, because I wrote X-Ray before Until Ray, even though Until Ray, the free book, came out first. But how Until Ray started was, it was a lot of backstory in X-Ray that I wanted to move out. And so I said, I'm just going to put up a little novella, and it's going to be free. It's probably going to be about 80 pages, and I'm going to have it as a free ebook. But then it grew and grew and grew to a full novel, but I still decided to still have it free, you know, as an ebook. And so that's how this trilogy started.
Okay, because I was going to ask you next. You sort of segued into my next question. And Until Ray, which I thought was the first book in the trilogy, but it was the one you sort of whet people's appetites to. But Ray is a player in Until Ray. Why would
right.
Sarita, mm-hmm. why would Sarita ever want to settle down with him? She has this winning career. Her life looks so on track. Why would she be attracted to Ray?
Because sometimes we, not just women, but I can't speak for a man, so, you know, we make mistakes. But then again, the question in the trilogy becomes, was it a mistake? Is it a mistake? You know, it was her first relationship. She had been rather focused on, you know, her career and her education. And also her mother's, you know, desire for her daughter's life. She wanted to make her mother proud. Her parents, but her mother put more pressure on her than her dad did. So, you know, her mother initially wanted her to become a doctor. And, okay, well, you're not going to become a doctor, then I want you to marry a doctor, because both of her parents were doctors. And so she was a achiever, did what she was expected to do, always got good grades, went to Catholic school all through college, you know, through Georgetown, you know, and did well, got a great job at General Motors. But she never dated, so she didn't have the dating experience. So as her first experience, you know, she did meet Ray through some mutual best friends. So her best friend was married to his best friend, and they reluctantly introduced her, knowing, you know, Ray's saying, I'm changed, I'm a changed man, you know, certain things have happened to me in my life, and I want to settle down with a good woman. And Sarita being, at the time when the trilogy opens, because it spans 30 years, so at the time when it opens, he's 24.
And how old is Sarita?
She's also 24. When they're the same age. She's maybe, like a few months older than him. Yeah, so they're really young when it first opens. And he's always been a player. But he never had a real relationship either. He's just had a lot of, you know, he just played around a lot, but never settled down with any of them. Where she didn't have a relationship at all, never even dated, never even kissed a man, nothing, you know. And then she meets him.
Now, why did she choose Ray? I got to ask you this, though. Okay, I hear you saying she's young, and that 24 is young. That is young. Why did she choose Ray, though, over Dr. Graham Emerson? I mean, some people would say, oh, what is she thinking?
Right. Well, part of it was attraction. You know, that's shallow, but, I mean, it's what initially, you know, physical attraction. She was very physically attracted to Ray. Ray is a very attractive man, okay, and she was attracted to him. He was her type. You know, some people have type. And even though he was criticized for having a type, if she was really to think about it, she also had a type. You know, her type was she loved a dark-skinned man, you know, and Dr. Graham Emerson was a very fair-skinned man, could actually pass, but it wasn't only so much of that with him, with Graham. It was also Graham seeming more like a brother to her because they grew up together. You know, their families were really tight. They grew up in the same area, which is called Palmer Woods, which is an area in Detroit. Actually, everything in the book was, you know, everything that I mentioned in the book is something, you know, a landmark or something in the city that you can actually find. Maybe there was one thing I may have fabricated. No, but that was an X-ray. But everything. So Palmer Woods, where they grew up, you know, she grew up with Graham. Their families are really tight. He's 8 years older than her, which to her at that age, early 20s, feels like it seems so old to her. And he used to be best friends with her older brother. So she sees him as more of a brother figure, and she just can't attach, you know, any romantic feelings to him. But she knows he's a great guy. But the person who has her heart, you know, is Ray.
I don't want to get a story away, but Sarita and Ray go on. Their relationship does advance. How long are they together? I don't want to say what a relationship was to Sarita. I don't want to give away that part.
Right, because I don't want to give any spoilers.
How long are they together? How long have they been together by the time until Ray ends?
So all total with, I mean, the fact that X-Ray is out gives a spoiler away for Until Ray. So obviously, you know, because if you read what X-Ray is about, then you know certain things about Until Ray. But they dated for a year, okay, and then they did end up, you know, marrying in Until Ray. But before that, their dating and engagement, you know, was a year. So Until Ray goes, it gives all the backstory so that when you read X-Ray, and Until Ray, again, is the free book on ebook. So when you read X-Ray, when you start into X-Ray, you know these characters. You know them, you know how they met, their challenges that were in their relationship what may have, you know, got pulled them apart as well.
And you know, when you said that the doctor, Emerson, her parents wanted her to go into that field, I can only imagine the conflicts Sarita getting with Ray had, even with her parents. But can you give us a brief overview of X-ray?
Oh yes. Now X-ray, let me see how I can do this because there are a lot of surprises. But I will say this about X-ray. So in Until Ray, it's all about them in their youth. So from like 24 to 26 is they're 24 to 26 when it ends, and it's in the 80s. But when X-ray starts, two parts, it's divided into three parts. And in the first two parts, it rotates between, you hear from the two main characters, so Ray Saint and Sarita Saint. It opens with Sarita, but it opens where Until Ray left off. So you get to know, well, what is she doing now as a result of what happened in Until Ray? But when you meet Ray in the very next chapter, it's current day, okay? So even when it rotates back and you read more about Sarita up until a certain point, it's still you're learning what happened in the book with Sarita as a result of Ray leaving. And, you know, some interesting characters that come into her life, mainly another doctor. And then Ray's regret for leaving her and things of that nature, you're dealing with that with him and what brings him back to Detroit. Because he's in
now,
Atlanta.
Ray and Sarita, they...
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Atlanta got a little spot in the trilogy. Now, Ray and Sarita were together 27 years. So he started out 24, he's young, he's a player. He must have settled down. He must have.
Well, now, I don't want to give anything away, but, yeah, they'll definitely have to read this and find out about how they were together for 27 years, because that's interesting. That's very interesting, but it's a little twisted.
In 27 years, he would have evolved some. I can't imagine no human not evolving any after 27 years.
Oh, yes, he's a totally different person. He's a completely different person, and he was evolving before all these years passed, but then something happens to really change his life and really change
him. Wow. Now, I was going to ask you, why would he leave Sarita after 27 years of marriage? 27 years with somebody, married, dating, working with somebody, it doesn't matter. You've gone through a lot.
So he didn't leave her after 27 years. So in book one, so I'm going to just tell everybody, for anyone who listens to this or may be listening, this is a spoiler, but by the release of X-Ray, it's already a spoiler, because if you read what X-Ray is about, if you read the cover on X-Ray, the blurb, you already know something that happened at the end of Until Ray. So he didn't stay with Sarita for 27 years. He comes back 27 years later. So he actually left her after just a year. Okay? And then he leaves for 27 years. And then he comes back.
Ah, okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Now that is a mystery. You stayed a year. What went wrong? What went so horribly wrong? And then 27 years later, what would make you come back?
You come back, right.
Yes, what would make you come back? Now then, the one, is that currently in the works? Or is that's the last book in the trilogy?
No.
Did
you say the one?
Yes.
That's actually, the one is actually a book that was already published. The last book in the trilogy is After Ray, which initially I put a cover, I did a cover reveal for After Ray. And then some of the feedback that I got on my cover reveal, I decided I'm going to revamp the cover. I'm going to change the cover because not only the feedback that I got on the cover, but when I started putting together marketing material with all three covers, the third book wasn't matching the other two as well. And so I said, okay, I have to go back. So, but the third book is called After Ray. It comes out the end of June, the last Friday in June. And I will hopefully have the new cover, put that up on my website and on Facebook probably by the end of next week. And
can you give us, are you, is it finished? You said it comes out the end of June. Can you give us any insight or a synopsis on After Ray? This is the very last book in the trilogy when you're going to wrap everything up and people can go from the beginning to the end and say, oh, okay, now I get
right. Yes. I mean, what I can say without giving any spoilers, because I really don't want to give any spoilers for especially the second, you know, second book. The first book is a free book, and it gives the background. So I think people, since it's free and it gives the background, people will be reading that more for background, and they won't necessarily mind as many spoilers. But when you are, you know, you want to be surprised. Most readers, they want that element of surprise. But I will say that, yes, it wraps mostly everything up. I want to say everything up that may have been lingering in book two. And it still goes back a little bit because this is a 30-year journey. So it still goes back a little bit to some things that needed to be wrapped up, especially in Sarita's life. So it, for her, it opens in 1993. So for the first, again, it's in three parts. And the first part, it goes back a little bit. But then for part two and part three, both of them are our current day. There was something I wanted to say about the trilogy. Oh, you asked me about the third part, the third book.
Yeah. If you, it's coming out in June. I wanted to ask.
It's
you
done. It is
spoiler,
finished.
But I was asking you for a snapshot. So it the whole story, and I love your website, the UntilRayTrilogy.com website, which I'm looking at even now as we're doing the interview. You said part of it takes place in Atlanta, but most of the book takes place in Detroit. Does it take place? I mean, Detroit is not the city it used to be. It's coming back. I know it's starting. Detroit is starting to come back. I'm told people, particularly the millennials, are coming back downtown. So I think the guy who owns the Cleveland Cavaliers, he has pumped a lot of money into it, and the other organizations trying to revive Detroit. But the Ray trilogy.
Oh, you know a lot about Detroit.
But does this take place during before? You know, the auto industry really started to struggle in Detroit, and then the scandals with the mayor and everything. When does the story take place? Is Detroit really struggling?
If you don't mind me asking, where are you from?
Oh, I'm from Ohio, but I just know.
Okay, because you know a lot about Detroit.
The time period that the story takes place, how's the city doing when the trilogy, rolling out?
Okay, so since it spans 30 years, so in the beginning, it's in the 80s. So that's when Detroit was, really doing well with the auto industry and things like that. But then through the 30-year period, like as you mentioned, the struggles that Detroit went through, but it is coming back, particularly the midtown downtown area. Now, there's still some work that needs to be done. In our neighborhoods. I still say our, even though I don't even live there, but I'm just, a native Detroiter that loves Detroit, but there's still a lot of work that needs to be done, in the inner city of Detroit. But the downtown area, midtown area is, a lot of businesses are coming in. There's a Whole Foods down there, which there used to not even be a grocery store downtown. So now there's a Whole Foods. And so, yes, through 30 years, you know, you first you see it at its height, and then, of course, there's the struggles, but it is, the city is on a, I want to optimistically think, you know, on the upswing.
You know, it'd be amazing if you even intentionally or unintentionally tie that swing in with what goes on with your characters in the Ray trilogy, and you could look back and say, "Wow, I didn't even intend to do that."
But that, right.
That, if it followed that same wave, we only have about 10 minutes left, and I want to talk about The One, because The One deals with reality television, which is, whoever thought when MTV kicked off that their series, I'm going way back, that this reality TV would still be going on today. And there's so many of them. It's like two or three set in Atlanta alone. So I wanted to ask you, The One deals with that, sort of like the reality TV. Have you ever visited a reality TV set or met or worked with somebody who was on a reality TV show?
Never. But I used to be so hooked to reality television. I couldn't get enough of it. I always watched reality TV. Now I'm not so much, because right now I'm on this thing where to finish all the books that I have, I'm not really watching television at all. But I did yesterday watch something that I taped on demand, which was a reality TV show, now that you mentioned that, Married to Medicine. I don't know. Do you watch any reality TV?
No, Holly. I've seen it, though. I have seen it, but no, I don't watch anything like, oh, this show come on Tuesday. I don't know.
You don't watch reality TV?
I've seen it, but I don't stick with, I haven't stuck with a show, no.
Okay. Married to Medicine is, for a reality show, I don't know. It's something very interesting about it. But so the whole thing with The One, that was when I was in my phase of watching a lot of reality television. So I added that element into The One. Now, The One, ironically, is a, you mentioned In Love with a Younger Man in the very beginning. So it's like we're going full circle, because this is the sequel to In Love with a Younger Man. So Elena, yes, she's the bachelorette on this reality show. So it's the sequel to In Love with a Younger Man.
Are there any plans, Cheryl, to turn The One into a TV series?
No. Mm-mm. My whole focus.
No. You are such a prolific writer. I mean, we could to our off the shelf listeners. I mean, like Mom, and when I was doing the research for your interview, and I thought about your book, like Mom, I thought about Iyanna Van Zandt, her show on OWN, and I thought, man, that's similar to what some of what the character in like Mom is like. So your books have this real life connect to them, to things that are going on in real life, like the reality TV shows. And I thought about Iyanna Van Zandt, the Like Mom book, and then Detroit, the changes it's gone through, and you set that for your Ray trilogy book series. And I want to get a URL out again as we come to a close on the show for our listeners, because that website is amazing. And it's untilraytrilogy.com, UNTILRAYTRILOGY, again.com. Who did your website? And that wasn't a question I meant to ask you, but who designed Until Ray Trilogy? Who did the website?
I designed it.
Are you serious?
Uh-huh. You know, you can put together your own website. So I put it together. It was really fun. It's really easy, you know, because pretty much you just pick the format and then you just start designing. And it's so fun to do that because you get to use your creativity. And, you know, as writers, you know, you can attest to this. We're very creative. So it was very fun for me to do that. And now with the advancement in technology, because when I did the Cheryl Robinson website, I had someone do that. You know, I had someone design it. And the frustration I had with that was, when I needed updates and things, I always had to ask, you know. And, you know, of course, I'm not their only client, so then I had to wait. Where this, I can just log on and do my updates, change things whenever I want. And so, yes, I designed it.
You did an amazing, amazing, amazing job. What was the design tool you used? I mean, this is really, really good.
Yes, so most of these website builders, like you just go on a website builder and they just, you pick the format that you want, you know, and then from there, you just kind of have to build it. So you just, you know.
So you use WordPress or?
No. Wix is the name of the website builder I use,
okay,
but there's
okay,
a ton
Wix,
of them.
Wix.
Mm-hmm. There's a.
Okay.
They all kind of operate the same now. Like back when I first did CherylRobinson.com, when I had someone do that, that was years back, and they didn't have all these different website builders, and so to get someone, you know, to hire someone to do your website was so costly, and now
mm-hmm.
it's so affordable, and you just, you know, design it the way you want, and they give you the little tools. And if you need any extra tools, then, you know, you might have to purchase that. But
you did an amazing, amazing job. Before we wrap up, Cheryl, coming down to our last few minutes, can you share 3 to 4 steps? Because I like to give our listeners something that they can take away, especially our listeners who would like to be a published writer themselves. Can you share, like, 3 to 4 steps that you take, other than your awesome website, that you found to be effective at getting the word out about your books?
Oh, I need to know 3 or 4 steps. I want to know myself. I mean, sometimes I, like, search for books, and there's not even that many books on the subject the way it used to be, because things evolve so much, because
mm-hmm.
that is the challenge with writing, how to market our work. And with more and more writers, you know, out there, all I decided that I can do is put my focus and my energy into writing the very best book possible so that word of mouth can eventually travel. And because everything else is out of my control. I mean, I can, you know, pay for certain advertising, you know, I can put a Facebook page up, but with the readers being inundated on so many different messages and so many different books, I don't know what's going to happen with all that. The only thing that I can control is my writing. So when I sit down and I'm writing, I'm thinking about how can I make this book the very best and enjoyable for the reader, and just letting my characters really live, which that's why I really love the Until Ray trilogy, because I really let my characters tell the story. I could have easily changed certain things, you know, wondering, oh, how is this going to be received or how is that going to be received? But I couldn't really worry about that. I wanted to do the story the way the characters, you know, were telling it to me. And hopefully, I'm hoping that word of mouth will spread. So I would say to writers out there, just, you know, concentrate on what we love the best, which is writing, and just write something that you want to read, because you have to love it first, because then you have to go market and talk about it. And if you don't like it, if you're just doing it because you think that this is on trend, or this is what's going to sell, or because this book did well and it was about this, so I'm going to write something similar. And then if it's not received well, because that's not even something that you wanted to write to begin with, it's going to be hard for you to promote it. So you have to just write what you love, you know, and
okay.
do your very best at it.
Where can listeners get copies of your book, Cheryl?
So they can, you know, of course, on Amazon. So it's in paperback. Well, Until Ray is not in paperback. Until Ray is just a free ebook, and you can get that wherever ebooks are sold. You can get it free and download it. X-Ray, the second book, is in paperback and ebook, and soon to be audiobook. But I'm doing the audiobook version. Now, it was supposed to have been out Well, when I tell you, you know, people charge like from $5,000 to $10,000 to do an audiobook for you. Now, when I tell you that they deserve every cent that they are charging, I am not exaggerating, because it is so time consuming to do an audiobook, even though I love it. The editing portion of it is, it takes forever. So I was hoping that it was going to be out right when X-Ray was released. I'm almost finished with it now, with the editing part. That's what took the longest. And they will be able to get that on Audible if they have an Audible subscription. They'll be able to get that hopefully sometime in April. And then the paperback they can get on Amazon. They could also order it directly from the Until Ray trilogy. They can get it from, they can request it from the library. The library, if they don't have it in the library, can order it if they want to read it in paperback.
Oh, okay, okay. And then tell us where you are on social media. Where can people find you on social media?
So I have a Facebook page. And I have an Instagram page, but I'm going to be honest, I don't do much on Instagram. I did it because my sister said, you need an Instagram page. And so I put it up there, but I'm so bad with it. I have to get more into that. Maybe after I wrap up with my audio book, I can try to do something on that. But I'm on Facebook, and it's facebook.com/UntilRayTrilogy, or you can just get it directly from the UntilRayTrilogy.com. There'll be a link to Facebook. And I am active on that Facebook page.
Okay. So you're on Facebook and Instagram. Maybe y'all can start hitting up on Instagram and she'll start doing more on it. Because you can, I do it on my cell phone. I'll just go on and do different things on my cell phone on Instagram. My son was the one who told me that to get on Instagram, but we I tell you, this hour at Off the Shelf always goes so fast. I never ask the guests all the questions that I had online to ask them because we run out of time, and that almost always happens. So for those of you who came in midstream or near the end of the day's show, no worries. Once the show finishes streaming, you can go back and listen to it in its entirety. You can embed it on your website. You can share it with other people who want to learn more about Cheryl Robinson and her books. And she, we're going to say she's coming up strong, just like Detroit, Michigan is coming back strong. And she's a Detroit native. You are going to want to get over to Until Ray Trilogy, that website. And she said she designed it herself, so that might be her next money maker. It's UntilRayTrilogy.com. It's that website. Just go over there and see if you ain't blown away. You can also find her online at CherylRobinson.com. And Cheryl Robinson is the author of the Ray Trilogy. She also, her first novel was Blues Bottom, and she wrote that in less than a week. She's also written If It Ain't One Thing, Sweet Georgia Brown, In Love with a Younger Man, When I Get Free, Memories of Yesterday, When I Get Where I'm Going, and more. We didn't even touch on a lot of the books that she has written. Again, her websites are CherylRobinson.com and UntilRayTrilogy.com. And that one is my favorite. That site just like, whoa. So I encourage you to go over and support her and get her until her first book in the series is free. Get it, the book free. She says about 80 pages. But then you can get the X-Ray.
No, it's a full book. It's actually, not to cut you off, but it is a full book.
It started as 80, and then she grew it up to full book. But that was for free in ebook format. Then you can get the X-Ray, and then After Ray should be out in June. If you just follow her along with her Until Ray Trilogy site or her Facebook page, she'll let you know when the book is out. And then she's working on an audio book as well. So we want to thank Cheryl Miller for being here with us on Off the Shelf. We want to thank each of you, our listeners. And as I always tell you, you are amazing. You're awesome. You are incredible. Go out and create a wonderful day for yourself. See you right back here at Off the Shelf next Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we have another awesome author on deck for you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, Cheryl Robinson. And I will shoot you an email. Bye for now.
Thank you. Bye-bye.